Hello, my name is Dr. Mike Reed. I'm a HIV physician at UCSF in San Francisco, and I also serve as the secretariat for the Lancet Commission on Tuberculosis. So in this podcast, I will be talking about updates in prevention options for people co-infected with HIV and TB, and we'll speak briefly about TB vaccines and updates from the field of TB vaccinology. But let me begin by just reminding you of the global health importance of TB. Ending TB as a disease of public health significance must entail a comprehensive, cogent prevention agenda, because the human reservoir of MTB infection is enormous, overwhelmingly asymptomatic, and long-lived. Identifying individuals who are at the highest risk of progression to TB disease, who would thus benefit the most from prevention therapy, is crucial. The benefits of preventive TB therapy have been known now for more than 60 years. Pioneering studies in the 1950s and 60s provided overwhelming evidence of the efficacy of isoniazid in preventing active TB in children, Alaskan native populations, residents of congregate settings living in facilities such as mental hospitals, and household contacts of TB patients. Subsequent work has further documented the benefits of preventive therapy for individuals with evidence of recent infection, those with radiographic evidence of prior untreated TB, recipients of immunosuppressive therapy such as TNF-alpha inhibitors, and other immunocompromised individuals. Large population-based studies of TB preventive therapy and mathematical models both suggest that preventative treatment of TB infection as part of a comprehensive approach that includes active case finding and prompt effective treatment can sufficiently reduce population level transmission to interrupt the cycle of infection, illness, and death. Unfortunately, despite an abundance of evidence of its efficacy, the use of prevention therapy globally has been limited, as TB control programs in low and middle income countries have focused almost exclusively on detection and treatment of individuals with active TB. The benefits of TB preventive therapy for people living with HIV are profound. The annual risk of reactivation in untreated HIV patients is 3 to 16% per year. This risk is even greater in individuals with HIV that have abnormal chest x-rays, have contacts with active TB cases, those that originate from countries with a high TB incidence rate, those with a detectable HIV RNA, and those with very low CD4 counts. We do know that antiretroviral therapy results in a prompt and marked decrease in the incidence of TB disease and provides another compelling reason why everybody with HIV should be started on antiretroviral therapy as soon as possible. However, even with the beneficial effects of antiretroviral therapy, the risk of TB disease among people living with HIV infection remains much greater than that of the general population. There are numerous studies highlighting the benefits of TB preventive therapy for people living with HIV. Studies both from low HIV incidence settings and high HIV prevalence settings. One of the most important papers demonstrating this beneficial effect was the 3-0 study from Rio de Janeiro in Brazil that was published in the Lancet Infectious Diseases in 2013. Researchers used a step wedge design, enrolling 18,000 individuals and demonstrating that 9 months of isoniazid preventive therapy led to a 31% reduction in death and TB amongst people living with HIV. Another study in a high HIV incident setting that has also demonstrated the life-saving impact of TB preventive therapy was the Temprano study, the results of which were published in the Lancet Global Health in 2017. Researchers there used a factorial 2x2 study design to evaluate whether isoniazid and or antiretroviral therapy in people living with HIV had an impact on TB disease and mortality. Those researchers demonstrated a 39% reduction in the risk of death from TB preventive therapy that was durable even 5 years after receiving INH. These studies both build on considerable other data demonstrating the incontrovertible benefit of preventive therapy for people living with HIV. More recently, a study that was presented at the CROI HIV conference in Boston in 2018, the 1HP study, evaluated the use of a shorter course of TB preventive therapy for people living with HIV. Researchers randomized individuals to either receiving a 1 month course of isoniazid and rifapentin given daily for 30 days, or a 9 month course of isoniazid, and demonstrated that the 1 month course was non-inferior to 9 months of INH. 1HP, as it's referred to, was associated with fewer adverse events, and patients were more likely to complete the course than those enrolled in the 9 month arm. This ultra short course TB preventive therapy regimen could be an important tool to control HIV related TB disease. In the US, current guidelines recommend TB preventive therapy for all people living with HIV when they have laboratory confirmed evidence of latent TB infection in the absence of active TB disease. Furthermore, there are at least three treatment regimens that are currently endorsed by the Department of Health and Human Services: the 9 month regimen of isoniazid, an alternative 3 month regimen of weekly isoniazid plus rifapentin, and then also a 4 month daily regimen of rifampin. As mentioned earlier, the recent 1HP study demonstrating a 4 week regimen of daily rifapentin and INH was similarly efficacious to the 9 month INH regimen may well pave the way for people living with HIV to have access to a tolerable, safer strategy. Nonetheless, to realize the full impact of preventive therapy globally requires that TB and HIV programs must devote additional resources to ensuring that active case finding and TB prevention therapy are integrated into HIV services. Global efforts to provide antiretroviral therapy have now reached 20 million individuals with HIV, but another 17 to 19 million remain untreated. Fewer than 4 million of those people living with HIV have ever received TB preventive therapy, highlighting the opportunities to substantially scale up this intervention. Unfortunately, failure to scale up access to TB preventive therapy in people living with HIV has likely caused several million deaths over the last decade. Turning now to vaccines. Up until recently, there wasn't much to get at TB vaccine science. We have one vaccine, the BCG vaccine, that is more than 100 years old and isn't even that great. It has variable effectiveness in preventing adult pulmonary TB and is not recommended for children who are infected with HIV. Despite compelling evidence from models demonstrating that a new vaccine with a 60% efficacy could avert 70 million TB cases within 25 years if given to only 20% of at-risk adults, progress towards developing viable vaccines have been hindered by numerous scientific and funding challenges. Fortunately, 2018 was a good year for TB vaccine research, and two studies published in the New England Journal offer promise on the horizon. In the H4IC31 vaccine trial, or the BCG revaccination trial, researchers explored using a phase two trial design whether revaccinating adolescents with BCG had any impact on or protection from TB disease. They enrolled 990 adolescents who had all received BCG as a neonate and were randomized either to placebo or to BCG revaccination. The study found that those that received BCG revaccination had 45% greater protection against sustainable TB infection defined by IGRA positivity or quantiferon positivity sustained through 6 months, even in the setting of very high TB transmission. A second trial published in the same issue of the New England Journal by Van der Meeren et al., also a phase two randomized controlled trial, explored a new TB vaccine. In this trial, participants were randomized to placebo or to receive the M72 vaccine. This is a fusion protein subunit developed from two immunogenic TB proteins, MTB32A and MTB39A, combined with the adjuvant system AS01, which is also a component of the malaria Mosquirix vaccine and the recombinant zoster vaccine Shingrix. This trial demonstrated that the M72 vaccine provided 54% protection against confirmed pulmonary TB, and this protection was far greater in individuals that were less than 25 years of age. There were no safety concerns associated with the vaccine. Clearly, these encouraging results need to be validated and extended, particularly in different geographical situations. But they make clear that despite challenges, the scientific prospects for developing a safe and effective vaccine to prevent TB are more promising than ever. An increased focus on early stage research has led to a robust pipeline and new technologies which are providing unprecedented scientific opportunities. In my opinion, vaccines represent the most cost-effective intervention to prevent TB disease and death. In the case of TB, long-term and sustained investments will be necessary to build on these early promising results, but the returns, even from a partially effective vaccine, would be very great. Nonetheless, I think it's fair to ask why we haven't seen greater investment into these TB prevention tools, and there are many reasons. The most obvious is that the burden of TB disease falls on low and middle-income countries, which are least able to afford these new expensive tools. As a relatively low prevalence disease and a highly latent infected population, efficacy testing of new tools will require large and lengthy trials. Finally, new tools are only as effective in controlling the disease as are the health systems able to implement them, and hence improvements in health systems are critical to address the TB epidemic globally. Nonetheless, there is considerable analysis demonstrating that further tools, particularly tools for primary prevention, vaccines in particular, will have a profound return of investment insofar as they prevent those needless TB deaths. Furthermore, there is compelling evidence for the argument that greater spending in TB research is likely to bring important economic benefits and disproportionately be beneficial to those living in low and middle income countries at the greatest risk of developing TB disease. I guess the bottom line is that TB research and development, particularly TB vaccine research and development, represents a great return on investment. Strategies for increased funding for TB R&D are highlighted in the upcoming Lancet Commission report, which I'll discuss in a separate podcast. Thanks for listening today, and for more information on many of the studies that I've highlighted, please check out the links below.